Welcome back. It's a Monday, the 14th day of January, 2019. I'm your host, Mark Hall. And when I look at what has been going on over the last few days, the things we haven't talked about since the news on Friday, I guess the only thing that really surprises me is that, A, we haven't yet had the inevitable market meltdown, but that's not as surprising as the fact that, as of yet, we don't have open warfare, not on the U.S.-Mexican border, but on the U.S.-California border. Maybe because there's not many people there. And who knows, maybe Las Vegas wouldn't notice anyway, as long as the booze kept flowing and the power was up so the slot machines keep running. So yeah, much of the news today does really come from the People's Republic. Maybe that should better be put People's Republics, because of course we have some on the other left coast too. So let me kick it off today with this typical, I guess I could call it a throwaway story, because that's what the left seems to want to do with what's left of the Constitution and even America itself. The nutcase from New York has demonstrated that if she's not the dimmest bulb in Congress, she's certainly pushing for the title. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez said the American Mirror obviously doesn't live by Dr. Martin Luther King's mantra to judge people by the content of their character rather than the color of their skin. The socialist Congress traitor lashed out against the communist broadcasting system. How's that for biting the hand that feeds you? On Twitter, after that so-called news network announced its reporter lineup to cover the 2020 campaign. Yes, she was able to notice there's not a single black journalist in the list. Well, there's probably not a single journalist in the list, although it was just dripping with diversity, unless you count the political or intellectual kind. You got lots and lots of other tokens from all kinds of other races, but there wasn't a single black journalist, she said. Unacceptable, she writes. Try again. Now, obviously, folks, you can pretty well bet there's not a single constitutionalist, much less conservative or libertarian, in that lineup. Maybe not even anybody that's ever read the Constitution. Arguably, though, by the Pocahontas definition, though, there are no doubt plenty of people of color in the group. I'd like to suggest that if we're really going to complain about the lack of diversity there, we ought to require that there be some people of intellect in the group, or at least integrity. Well, I guess Dr. Martin Luther King was right on this score, although things have certainly moved in the wrong direction. The content of their character, so far as the modern left is concerned, doesn't seem to matter a whit anymore. And the leftist bigotry isn't confined just to things that are obvious from a photograph. Here's a piece from Jim Hoft at the Gateway Pundit, headlined, "Disgusting! Democrats Kamala Harris and Mazie Hirono push their anti-Christian bigotry against U.S. judges." They're no longer even trying to hide that. It's okay to be an atheist or a Muslim in Congress. Heck, you don't even have to know what self-evident truths are anymore, much less even pretend you're serious about that oath thing. But the literally godless left doesn't even seem to be trying to hide their bigotry anymore. Says Hoft, back in December 2017, Democrat Senator Sick Dianne Feinstein led the attacks on Judge Amy Barrett because she's a Catholic, saying, quote, "The dogma lives loudly within you." Dick Durbin from Illinois accused that same judge of being, quote, "an Orthodox Catholic." That's evidently the kind of term these same hypocrites would call a dog whistle. That is, if you used it against anybody who wasn't okay to hate. And this week, Democrats continue to show their anti-Christian bigotry as far-left senators Kamala Harris and Mazie Hirono attacked Judge Brian Boucher for his membership in a Catholic men's group, the Knights of Columbus, founded, says the piece, in 1882 and dedicated to charitable work. Todd Starnes at Fox News reported this: "There are a disturbing number of Democrat lawmakers who believe Christians must renounce their religious faith and affiliations in various faith-based organizations if they would want to hold public office. Not, of course, if you want to be anything else." The latest victim of this blatant religious bigotry is Brian Boucher, President Trump's nominee for the U.S. District Court in Nebraska, who came under attack by those same two communist senators for reasons we've already mentioned. And both of them posed a series of written questions demanding to know whether he would end his religious affiliations should they deem to allow him to be confirmed and serve. And yeah, folks, I do have to point out this particular blatant hypocrisy, because you notice these same people don't seem to want to ask those of the only acceptable religion, outside of outright atheism, whether they would renounce tenets of their religion. Like, oh, I don't know, killing homosexuals, or maybe, yeah, Bible believers. Or advocating for the sexual disfigurement of young girls, that kind of thing. I don't see them complaining too much about pedophilia, either. I guess what I'm trying to very subtly suggest here, folks, is that I've been doing this radio show now for a number of years. And over that time, I've always pointed out rampant hypocrisy when it rears its ugly head. It's just that nowadays, the head never goes back down. I guess that takes us to the timetable for Civil War 2.0. I've got several stories on that front. Let's start with Virginia, which seems to want to imitate New Jersey and see if they can be the place where the Fort Sumter shot is fired. The plan to ban the sale and possession of certain kinds of firearms, can you say any that go boom, proposed by their chief traitor, socialist occupant of the governor's mansion, Ralph Northam, could affect, says a piece from the Free Beacon, millions of gun owners. Gee, do you think? Most of whom probably don't want to be felons, but when felons occupy the positions of power, hey, that's what you get. While it's short on details, Northam's announcement says that part of his proposed infringement would ban the, quote, sale, possession, purchase, or transport of anything, and they don't even define it, that they will call an assault firearm, including, by the way, anything that's able to be equipped with a magazine holding more than 10 rounds of ammunition, which is most of them. And the beauty of the plan, of course, is, hey, we'll just do it. We'll worry about making it appear legal later. So let's turn from there to France, where we'll see what it looks like when people who've already been disarmed finally decide they've had enough, but really can't do anything about it. The Daily Mail headline from the Socialist UK says, riot police blast tear gas at the yellow vest activists who returned fire with catapults. I guess it's better than nothing. As violence rages into the ninth week now, after thousands have flooded the French capital, they say, in tax fury. Well, folks, turns out that there's a lot more to be furious about than that, but it doesn't get reported. Hey, what are the French going to do anyway? Tear gas and baton charges were used by French police on thousands of yellow vest protesters. The ugly scenes came as the ninth Saturday in a row demonstrated violence that has routinely reduced Paris now to a war zone, and blah-de-blah-de-blah. Demonstrations were seen in other French cities and towns, too, as 80,000 police and gendarmes were mobilized. Certainly, as we've seen all over Europe, the real source of frustration, including the Islamic invasion, doesn't get much press coverage. As a matter of fact, it's politically incorrect to even mention when a murderer, rapist, or in London, somebody that whacks off somebody's head or stabs them repeatedly with a knife, just happens to shout Allahu Akbar. So now it's pretty obvious why the same leftists, at least the same type of leftists, are working so hard to produce the same kind of effect in these formerly free United States. Yes, over the weekend, the partial government shutdown became one of the longest in the books, depending upon how you count it, and still pretty much the only people that have noticed, outside of the District of Criminals, are those that one way or the other suck at the public teat, and that includes the Ministries of Truth. Which brings me to a brief wall story. This comes from General Anthony J. Tata via Fox News, who writes that President Trump is right when he argues that drones and technology are not, in themselves at least, sufficient to stop illegal immigration. Of course, he says, our Border Patrol forces armed with technology and drones are a lethal force, but that combination alone cannot totally prevent illegal immigrants or hostile forces from entering the United States. He goes on to talk about his combat experience as a commander in operational combat zones in places like Kosovo and Afghanistan. I had thousands of troops, he said, and the latest technology arrayed along the borders with Macedonia and Pakistan, respectively. But despite having the best soldiers in the world and the most advanced technology, we still couldn't completely stop enemy infiltration. He goes into some detail, but notes ultimately that whether the border is 100 miles or 1,500 miles long, the best military in the world with the best technology in the world could not, 100%, prevent infiltration. And in those cases, the conditions were life and death. arguably. They still are, but most Americans aren't going to be told that. The point, of course, he says, is that those who oppose a wall as part of the integrated border security on the nearly 2,000-mile U.S. border with Mexico are clueless about the practical realities of securing our borders. All right, well, that's fine as far as it goes, folks, but here I say full stop. Because with all due respect, General, you have to understand this battle, this argument, has nothing to do with securing the borders. Because that's not the goal of those who oppose what's going on here. Their goal is to secure an overthrow of the United States, in which case, obviously, you want invaders. It really is that simple. They've already overthrown the Congress and the Constitution. They own the media and most ports on both the left and left coasts. These other various borders are just subsequent military objectives along the way. Which leads me to a story or two about one of the major military objectives outside of taking over the District of Criminals. And maybe by now it's clear exactly what that must be. This piece comes from Lance Johnson at Natural News about Governor Gavin Newsom. He replaced the Moonbeam, who has now committed financial suicide on behalf of the People's Republic of California by expanding taxpayer-funded health care coverage to illegal immigrants. And they got a million of them. Well, that's an understatement. Right after his coronation, in his first traitorous act as governor, Newsom signed a series of executive orders that fine those remaining California citizens who haven't escaped yet if they don't have health care coverage, while financially catering to illegal immigrants and demanding federal assistance for health care coverage for same. Their traitor-in-chief is committed to pillaging California's remaining hard-working population with higher taxes while providing the masses of incoming illegal immigrants the funds they want for all kinds of profligate health care spending. California, says Johnson, will become the first state to cover undocumented adults under age 26 with the state's Medicaid program. As the executive order expands, Affordable Care Act benefits to young illegals. And that act alone, of course, will drive up health care service costs, taxing citizens first from their paycheck, and secondly, when they require what now passes for health care there. Newsom's new executive orders are part of his first year California, he didn't spell it right, needs a K in there, for all plan, which includes steps towards universal health care coverage, whether people there are silly enough to want it or not. And this new executive order expands benefits up from 2 million previously to 13 million people that now constitute Californians, legal or not. I'm going to skip over all these salary, tax, and benefit numbers, but I will make this brief observation. When it comes to this criminal scumbag's plan to Californicate us all, my response is, leave the rest of us alone. But they have no intention of doing that. The executive order also mandates Obama-like fines on individuals who either cannot afford or would prefer not to participate in these socialist plans. This is one way, says the coverage, that the California governor plans to pay, yeah sure, for illegals' access to more prescription drugs and doctor visits. They're fighting back against the FedGov's attempts to destroy Obamacare by, quote, reinstating the individual mandate at the state level. And yeah, folks, not just theirs, but yours too. Because if fines aren't enough to recoup the lost federal funds, they'll attempt to take the money from the rest of the country's taxpayers too. Newsom has already sent a letter to the president they love to hate and the Congress traitors demanding that federal laws, whatever that now means, be amended to enable California to apply for and receive all kinds of bigger bucks. In other words, California's illegal immigrant population is entitled to state and federal taxpayer funds from every other state. Newsom's letter says this will, quote, empower California, yeah, sure, to truly innovate and begin the kind of socialist transformation that will provide the path to a single-payer health care system, just like Venezuela. In his inaugural address, he proclaimed, I'm not going to read his inaugural address, folks. It's not like we haven't heard it before, from Lenin to Castro to Noriega. But I will ask the next question that Natural News gets around to asking. Is it possible that Trump might want to extend the border wall up the east and then northern sides of California? I'm going to put it this way. Is it possible that secession is no longer what America needs in the form of leaving the formerly free United States? I'm thinking maybe it's time to consider expulsion. Says Johnson, the president ought to do whatever it takes to protect the country from treasonous governors like Newsom, who look to pillage the country's resources all for the benefit of the invaders that they are so anxious to entice in. And he makes a good point, because with the western border of the United States largely being California, it's pretty well impossible to protect the rest of the United States from what the plundering state is up to. Once the invaders are in California and welcomed, there's literally nothing stopping them from invading the rest of the United States via that western beachhead. Imagine, and I'm not kidding about this, imagine during World War II, if the same kind of traitors had been in office and literally welcomed the Japanese ashore from San Diego to San Francisco. Concludes Lance D. Johnson, not only the intended illegal invasion, but also their drugs, disease, crime, corruption, mandates, and continued financial self-destruction are all part of what literally amounts to an outright attack on the United States by the traitors on the Western Front. Dave Hodges of the Common Sense Show makes a couple of salient observations, too. He says they've learned that the state of California's debt and an economy based on disaster capitalism is inevitably, and this is no surprise, going to lead to the bankruptcy of that state government. Too bad they can't print money. Oh, but if they were an independent country, or maybe if they sell themselves to China, they'll be able to. Trump's cut off their FEMA disaster funds in California, which last year diverted the first wave of disaster money to its growing state debt, simply cannot meet its financial obligations. Last year, the People's Republic spent $27 billion on illegal aliens and the sanctuary state movement. They're looking to really top that this year. Last week, he says, California defaulted on a $10 billion loan. Next month, it'll be a $60 billion default, and by April, California state government won't be able to meet its projected $128 billion budget. You already know that PG&E is going to be sacrificed. So is it just possible that the Trump administration will declare California to be not only insolvent, but also incapable of managing its affairs, and that the state itself, and we can only hope that he'll do this, is in a state of outright sedition against the U.S. government? Perhaps, he suggests, before spring, the president will need to put the 101st Airborne on alert to protect the members of the new California statehood movement in that state that want out. California's so-called government, as we understand it, is clearly on its last legs, and its imminent demise is a testimony to what happens when government embraces Venezuela-style socialism and loses sight of the fact that government's only duty, according to the founders, is to secure the rights of its citizenry. What we're seeing, folks, your host says here, is what happens when a communist government like California, and now it's managed to take over the House too, criminally or otherwise, literally declares war, not only on the government of the formerly free United States, but the rest of the states as well. And I guess I'm going to have to suggest that's a much bigger emergency than the invasion from the South. Although, arguably, if you step back and take a look at it, it's pretty much all the same thing. And you know what? As I look for a way to wrap things up for today, because most of the news is really trivial by comparison to what we're really seeing in the way of Civil War 2.0, I came across this in the archives, and I thought, you know, the parallels here are really more than dramatic. Not only in terms of Hollywood and California bigotry, especially against, you know, white people, those people that are no longer welcome, but also, at least to some extent, destroy farmers in a similar but different way. They still want to steal their land, obviously, in California's case, by taxing them out, regulating them out, certainly cutting off their water, and if all of that fails, yeah, burn them out. So here next is a story from August of last year that seems ever so apropos today, as we too stand on the brink of a civil war. Consider the parallels. Well, folks, if South Africa is a harbinger for the United States, especially when it comes to the coming communist threat, gun and land confiscation, and of course the move towards white genocide, they're almost inevitable at this point. Civil war will be interesting to watch. Things are looking more and more tense by the day. A summary story from Zero Hedge says that South African civil war looms while white farmers prepare as best they can for what's coming via the Black Hitler, President Ramaphosa, or maybe they're talking about the other guy, leader of the so-called economic freedom fighters, Julius Malema, and an outright in-your-face white-hating racist. There's more than one of them. Anyway, as South African President Ramaphosa's so-called land reform plans begin to confiscate white farmer-owned lands with no compensation, the rhetoric on both sides of the policy are beginning to signal little hope of avoiding dire and direct interracial conflict or another civil war. Insists the land-grabbing president, quote, "This is no land grab, nor is it an assault on the private ownership of property." No, these are not the droids you're looking for. Land reform in South Africa, he says. And this is a communist speaking, remember? So reform doesn't mean what you might think the English word once meant. Land reform in South Africa is a moral, and that doesn't mean what you thought either, social and economic imperative. By bringing more land into productive use, he continued, by giving more South Africans assets and opportunities, the country is creating conditions for greater, more inclusive, and more meaningful growth, unquote. And tell that to them when they're starving a year from now. A number of black Africans, though, seem to see through his rhetoric and point out that they can read between the lines. Basically, killing white folk is very much on the agenda. Here's a quote from one of the prominent ones that calls himself the Imam of Peace. "Let us kill the white man. The white man must die." And, of course, the infamous Malema likes to sing a song in public called "Kill the Boer." And no, they'll tell you, it really doesn't mean they're serious about doing what the lyrics say. Although when Malema was confronted by an actual journalist saying, "Hey, you know, it upsets people when you say that we're not planning on killing white people yet," some of them think there's a message there. Malema called such folks crybabies, which, if you stop to think about it, isn't really that much of a denial. Note Zero Hedge, a decade ago, few people had ever heard of Malema, but now he commands millions and grows more powerful each day. And while South African President Ramaphosa continues to claim there's nothing going on, people are being incited by leaders like Malema into extreme violence, and the white farming community is dying and pleading for the international community to pay attention. Which brings me to a related piece, this one courtesy of, Aiden Salazar at InfoWars, who notes that residents of South Africa are creating their own videos, backing up a tweet from U.S. President Donald Trump a few days back, claiming that white farmers in South Africa are, in fact, being murdered, whether the Waste Stream and World Press want to note it or not. Danny Barnard, 32, a South African citizen, on Monday thanked the president for bringing attention to the issue and said he faces constant violence in the region. Quote, "As you may all know, President Trump tweeted last Wednesday about what's going on in South Africa, and there was a lot of backlash from the fake news mainstream media, especially in the United States," he said, noting that his grandfather was murdered on his farm. Quote, "As a South African Boer, I can tell you guys that it's 100% correct what Mr. Trump said in his tweet." Oh, and if you're not familiar with the term B-O-E-R, which is what Malema wants to kill, Boer is the South African term, referring to whites whose immigrant forefathers settled South Africa before anybody now alive was there about four centuries ago. Continuing, "We do not try to spread any false information, nor are we right-wing extremists or Nazis, as they try to call us. We're only citizens that are fearing for our lives because we live in a very violent society in South Africa. And it's true. It is not only the white South Africans, but also the black South Africans. But there's a big difference here. Our government actually encourages violence towards whites and endorses it," unquote. Others went on to support those tweets and say simply, "Yep, what isn't being reported by the Waste Stream Press is true nevertheless." Quote, "All we're asking," says Jacques Bernard, the brother of the aforementioned tweeter, "is for you guys to do the research. Find out for yourselves. Don't believe the media. They're lying. They're trying to cover it up, but unfortunately it's true. People are dying every day in South Africa because of racial hate toward white people." A woman, who also thanked Trump for calling attention to the dire situation, noted she's been the victim of an armed robbery and now carries a knife as a defensive measure, saying, "Mainstream media, I dare you to quote me on this." And, of course, Ramaphosa continues to claim that when it comes to stealing white folks' land, they're going to do it legally. Yeah, they already have in plan a constitutional amendment that would make explicit the conditions under which land could be expropriated without compensation. Isn't that clever, folks? Once upon a time, that was called theft. I guess it's not if Big Brother does it under color of law. And the problem is, if you think back, didn't Adolf Hitler do exactly the same thing and send a whole bunch of people to concentration camps? If you can take their land without compensation, I guess you can ship them to concentration camps and kill them, too. because it's all, well, you know, legal. Oh, and let's not forget, South Africa's trying to disarm those white folks, just like California, too. But that's only part of the story now, isn't it? Think about it. Thanks for joining us today, and may Yahuwah bless you and yours.